draft is fast approaching. When it occurs in Pittsburgh in a little more than 2 weeks, potential number one overall pick Fernando Mendoza will not be in attendance. He won't be attending the draft in the Steel City in person. Instead, he's chosen to remain in his hometown of Miami to celebrate the selection with his friends and family. ESPN, the first to report that news, the Raiders have the number one overall pick and are expected to take Mendoza with that selection. Speaking of Miami, Dolphins running back Devon Achane was not present at the team's voluntary offseason program. 2026 is the final year of Achane's contract, with new head coach Jeff Hafley saying that his absence was, quote, part of the business. Day baseball in the seventh inning. Royals and Guardians right now tied up at one apiece in Cleveland. Orioles and White Sox about to get things underway. Defending Masters champion Rory McIlroy will begin defense of his green jacket on Thursday morning at 10:31 Eastern time in first round play.
Fox Sports Update on KPRL, brought to you by Deeds Bar and Grill at the Paso Robles Golf Club. Great food, great view, great people. Prime Rib Monday, Taco Tuesday, Wine Down Wednesday, and specials Thursday through Saturday. Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with your agribusiness update. Well, Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins is working directly with ag input companies to address the still rising costs amid warnings of fertilizer supply shortages and ongoing disruptions. AgriPulse reports that the White House is wrestling with high prices of diesel and fertilizer, which have risen sharply since the Iran war began. And we're now talking about this likely not just being a spring problem, but a problem that will likely last into the fall. Well, the USDA will lead a trade mission to the Philippines next week to expand market access for American farmers, ranchers, and producers. The mission follows a trade agreement in July of 2025 that opened new opportunities in the Philippines. Michelle Beckering, USDA Deputy Undersecretary, says the mission will connect U.S. exporters to reliable buyers in one of Asia's fastest-growing markets. The Philippines is the 10th largest market for U.S. agriculture and food products. Well, Senators Amy Klobuchar and Jeanne Shaheen led 10 Democrats in raising concerns to USDA about the reliability of their data. They said that a recent Farm Journal survey found 73% of ag producers and 78% of ag retailers are less confident in USDA reports in recent years. The senators say farmers need reliable data to make critical decisions on what to plant, how to manage risks, and when to market their products.
Ranchers, don't miss the 11th annual Montana Maternal and 5th annual Semternal Production Sale, Friday, April 10th in Baker, Montana. A powerful set of Angus and Simmental genetics featuring Sons of Ace and Jameson, SAV Abundance, and more, built for maternal strength and longevity. All bulls are fertility tested and backed by a first breeding season guarantee with free delivery across Montana and adjoining states. Sale time is 1 o'clock. View catalog and videos at open8genetics.com or bid online at bid.superiorlivestock.com.
Western Stockman's, making health a part of your animal's life. From the dairy farms to the city, from the feedlots to your backyard, it's quality products and people who work so hard. Western Stockman's, give you our best. Western Stockman's, making health a part of your animal's life.
From the Ag Information Network, I'm Bob Larson with today's Agribusiness Update.
Today in Farming on KPRL is brought to you by Paso Robles Glass, established in 1947, always up on the latest technology and training. They do windows right. Call Paso Robles Glass, 805-238-4014.
This Fox Business News Update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Stuart Varney, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages are losing steam in afternoon trading, and oil prices are continuing to climb as President Trump's fast-approaching deadline for Iran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz approaches. Investors are awaiting any breakthrough on a Middle East truce, as President Trump's deadline is slated to expire at 8 p.m. Eastern time. Tech and consumer staples are among the laggards. The Magnificent Seven big-cap tech stocks are tumbling, led by Apple and Tesla. Apple stock is sinking over 3%, with the tech giant the worst performer in the Dow so far today. Its dive comes after Nikkei Asia reported that its long-anticipated foldable phone has hit engineering snags and may face shipping delays. Shares of Medicare insurers like United Health, Humana, among others, are surging after the Trump administration said it would increase payments to Medicare insurers. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
I'm alpine skier Michaela Schifrin. I've won the most World Cup ski races in history. But what does success mean to me? Success means discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us, and it's why Stifel is one of the fastest growing global wealth management firms in the country. If you're looking for success, surround yourself with the people who will get you there. If you're an advisor or investor, choose Stifel, where success meets success.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult a financial advisor before making any investment decision.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
American Legends, next on KPRL. Brought to you by Davis Body Shop.
There'll always be an England, and England shall be free. We sang those words a long time ago in World War II. I hope they're still true. I'll be right back.
Reagan, in his own voice, is brought to you by K-Brush Concrete, serving the entire Central Coast for more than a decade. Call Kevin at K-Brush Concrete, 423-4033.
Many commentators and pundits have called attention to the fact that the United States seems to follow a course set by the British. Many put us about 15 years behind our English cousins in adopting social reforms pioneered by them. Well, of late, that's been a cause for alarm. Under the leadership of the Socialist Labor Party, Britain has slid into seemingly unsolvable economic problems. Inflation and unemployment are staggering, and the value of the pound is sinking like a modern-day Titanic. Per-man-hour productivity in her industrial structure has gone down until the once-vaunted English craftsman is way behind his counterparts in all of the common market countries. Still, egged on by irresponsible labor leaders, he asks for shorter hours, higher pay, and more perks. That's fringe benefits. Strikes for little or no cause are commonplace. Well, at last a voice has been raised, and we as well as the British should take heed. Surprisingly, the voice comes not from the opposition party, the Conservatives, but from a leader, indeed the leader, of the Labour Party, Prime Minister Callaghan. He says the cozy world which we were told would go on forever, where full employment would be guaranteed by a stroke of the Chancellor's pen, cutting taxes and deficit spending, is gone. The Prime Minister, it is said, now sees socialism as an oversold superstition among the British working class. Well, if it is true that somehow we take a parallel course to Britain, then we'd better listen to what the Labour Prime Minister told the British Labour Party at its recent convention. He obviously was not out to win a popularity contest, and didn't. But even those who jeered the loudest must have wondered if they could equal his courage. "We must ask ourselves unflinchingly," he said, "what is the cause of high unemployment?" And he answered his own question. "Quite simply and unequivocally, it is caused by paying ourselves more than the value of what we produce. This is an absolute fact of life which no government, be it left or right, can alter. We have lived too long on borrowed money, and even borrowed ideas, and live in too troubled a world to be able in a matter of months or even a couple of years to enter the promised land." He went on to say to his surly audience, "We used to think you could just spend your way out of a recession and increase employment by cutting taxes and boosting government spending. I tell you, that option no longer exists. And insofar as it did exist, it worked by injecting inflation into the economy." He added, "We can only become competitive by having the right kind of investment at the right kind of level, and by significantly improving the productivity of both labor and capital. Nor will we succeed if we use confetti money to pay ourselves more than we produce. I wonder if George Meany would like to ask him to address the AFL-CIO convention. And while he's here, maybe he could speak to Congress. This is Ronald Reagan. Thanks for listening.
Reagan in his own voice, brought to you by K Brush Concrete. Anything to do with concrete, from a 5x5 walkway to a 500,000 square foot foundation. Call 423-4033.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL, 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
It's Tuesday. It's 1230. The bear is in the building. It's time for Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. Today's first guest is a local treasure, the pastor Frank Triggs. We're going to be talking about the past holidays, Easter and Passover. We talk about similarities and myths. We want to talk about anti-Semitism versus anti-Israel sentiment, and Frank's recent trip to the Holy Land and Israel in particular, and how Christian values inform political views. Frank, welcome to your first visit to PWM.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
It's great having you. And then at 1 o'clock, we have Dr. Sarah Forsyth. She is a regenerative healing educational consultant, and we're going to talk about the rise of regenerative medicine, how regenerative alternatives compare with traditional pharma treatments, and her protocols for better health. You can call in or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Frank, I mean, I'm sure most people know you, but tell us a little bit about your background. I mean, you told me before we went on air that you're a reformed insurance guy. Okay.
Yeah.
how did insurance lead to your relationship with God and becoming a pastor?
Well, insurance didn't really lead to my relationship with God. That started first, and I sensed the call of God in my life for ministry, but my start was in small churches. Therefore, I had to be bivocational, all the way from working in a steel warehouse, driving a truck, then landing. What a cushy job, an office job. I thought I'd died and gone to heaven sitting there handling claims and doing insurance work. That was wonderful. And it was great experience and training for my management later in pastoring churches.
So how long ago did you become a pastor? Do you officially become a pastor when you get a congregation? Is that what happens?
Yes, you're a pastor when there's a congregation out there. Before that, you're just a minister.
Okay,
and,
got it.
Preparing, you might be on the church staff and be one of the pastors on the church staff. But I started out as a lead pastor in a very small church of 26 people. Hmm. And so insurance, I love it. It paid my bills.
There you go. And you have three children who are now pastors, correct?
I do.
How did that all happen?
Well, as I mentioned to you before we went on the air, I had hoped one of them become a rich businessman and support me in my old age. But I have two daughters and a son. My daughter and her husband serve a church in Lakewood, California.
Okay.
He's the lead pastor, and she is on staff as a staff pastor. Before that, she was a minister.
Who really runs the thing, though? Her or him?
Probably my daughter.
Okay. Just checking.
Before that, she had worked as our children's director for our denomination in what we call Southern California. That's from Fresno to the Mexican border. Mm-hmm. So she's a very accomplished speaker and a world-class ventriloquist, so the kids really love her.
Wow.
And my youngest daughter is in Bakersfield serving with her husband. He's an executive pastor of a mega church that has some seven campuses, one in San Luis Obispo, and they both serve in the administration of our denomination, that which you are a part of. And then my son, he's got the great job. He pastors a church I used to pastor in Ojai, California.
All right.
And just talked to him right after Easter to see how things went. Matter of fact, it was yesterday because he was just too tired to talk to me on Easter Sunday in the evening.
I'll bet. It's a long day, huh?
It was a long day.
And how was, I know you went out to the Easter ceremony in Chandon at the, what is it, chapel?
Yes.
How did that go? Was it well attended?
It was well attended. Amazing time out there. And the Clark family is very hospitable. They provide a cowboy breakfast following it with tri-tip.
All right.
And so, and we can't even smell it inside the chapel. So that's good. It doesn't, but it was an excellent service. Had three different speakers from a wide variety of Christian backgrounds. One was a Catholic priest. Then there was one evangelical, maybe two evangelicals. I'm not sure. Because I'm not acquainted with the lady minister that they had, but she did an excellent job.
So, you know, we just finished up with Pesach, Passover,
yes,
and Easter. And I know we wanted to talk just a few minutes about the similarities and the differences between the two holidays and
sure,
how they connect with each other. So I'll let you take it away here.
Okay. As was a surprise for me when I began in ministry and started reading the Bible for serious, I discovered that in the King James Bible is the only translation that the word Easter appears. And so I checked it out, and it turns out that is a mistranslation. And I'm a big King James fan. I now use the New King James, which has taken care of some of the antiquity of that particular translation. That word in the original is Passover. It is not Easter. Probably they used and chose the word Easter because that was culturally what everybody knew about at the time. But in reality, Passover and Easter are intricately connected. And let me use the word, I guess I'll just use the word Easter. But it's based upon the Passover and the Jewish traditions of Passover. Jesus was observing Passover and eating the Passover meal in the night that Judas betrayed him. And this brings about the reality that Christianity has no other foundation but Judaism. From the ancient teachings of the Torah and what is called the Old Testament, even in the New Testament, all of our writers, with the exception of one, were Jews. All of our prophets were Jews. I think Luke, and who's the author of Luke and Acts, are the only one that was a Gentile writer. So we owe a great deal as Christians to the Jewish people, and of course the covenant of the Old Testament, and or you could call it the former testament, because we still think every believer has to follow the Ten Commandments, but we don't do it from the external; we do it from the internal. As Christ said, he was writing those laws on our heart.
Mm-hmm. And what was I going to ask you? There's also, I mean, a lot of, I guess, I don't want to say pagan, but, you know, Roman antecedents in Easter. You know, I mean, when was the first Easter celebration, so to speak, for the Christians?
Most likely, because we don't know for sure. It might have been around the second century.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, the word Easter, it's a misnomer, because again, it should be Passover. But the word Easter is a kind of a slight corruption of Ishtar, which was a heathen goddess.
Okay.
And it came out of the Roman experience.
Hmm.
But our celebration of, quote, Easter has nothing to do with that. It has to do with a Passover meal, the betrayal of Jesus, his crucifixion, and his resurrection.
All right, let's move to your trip. You recently took a trip to Israel.
Yeah.
It's not your first, but this one was specific to you getting, I hate to use this word, but a bird's eye view or a tour of the actual October 7th, 2023 massacres that occurred.
Yeah, Barry, that's a very good way to put it.
And so tell us a little bit about that and what you learned from that. I mean, some of the, I don't want to even say highlights, but because I'm sure it was quite a moving, I watched some of the film video that you sent me, and it kind of a lot of the descriptions of what happened reminds me of the Holocaust, you know, having gone to the Holocaust Museum and being, I've gone to Israel a couple of times as well. So, but tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we went to Nova the first day. Mm-hmm. So after a 14 and a half hour plane trip, getting a little bit of rest and having our internal clocks messed up, our first day was at Nova, where the invasion took place. That took place many places, but that is where there was a music festival going on, and it was a secular festival of young Jewish people, and it was celebration. And I don't think I was quite prepared to stand on the dirt where the blood was in the sand. Mm. We saw the memorials of each person that was killed or captured, and it was extremely moving. I'm one of these people that when I first see something shocking, it doesn't affect me. But 24 hours later, as it ruminates in my mind, you realize what happened there. And today, now, as I'm talking to you, I can feel my emotions welling up within me about what happened. And the atrocities that took place there, simply because those people were Jewish. There was no other reason. And so we spent that first day there. We had a service of 1,000 pastors then gathered, and we made awards to some of the hostages that had been released, some of the families that had stood courageously, and we recognized them. And one of the things that impacted me in that service is this was a Christian organization standing up with Jewish leaders saying, we stand with you, we love you, we care about you, and we will speak out and do whatever is necessary to speak against such atrocities against your people. We owe our faith to the Jewish people, and there was no compromise of our Christian message, and there was no compromise of their Jewishness. I thought it was wonderful.
So as a result, you know, unfortunately, as a result of all this, I mean, our attention has been focused on the Middle East now and continues to be focused on the Middle East since this time. I mean, it would come in and out of focus, you know, as there was a flashpoint or something like that. But this has been an ongoing conversation now, and one of the big issues in the United States, and in my experience as well, is a real, what appears to be a rise of anti-Semitism. Now, but I've kind of been corrected by some of my younger friends, and I have a few who say it's not really anti-Semitism; it's more of an anti-Israel sentiment. So, after going on this trip, and from the people you talk to, what's your opinion on this? Is it anti-Semitism or is it anti-Israel sentiment that we're seeing?
Oh, my response to that is yes. What I mean by that, well, not exactly. Maybe two sides of the same coin. And I think it's a matter of misinformation about the history of Israel and the history of the land. Because people who refer to the Jews as being colonizers or occupiers, they don't know history. Because every time you have an archaeological dig in that area, you will find artifacts that refer to the Jewish people that are not in scrolls, but in clay tablets. Their history is way before Christ and the time of the Exodus, somewhere around 1400 BC. Mm-hmm. So they have been in that land a long time. Everybody else is an occupier.
They just found something else recently. I read somewhere an ancient bullet that were used in slings that proved. I saw this I think I can't remember exactly where, but it was one of the Easter, you know, articles. And yeah, they keep finding all these old antiquities that, you know, show that, you know, the Jews were there for a long time.
A long time, and they're just reoccupying the land. that God gave to them and promised to them and said would be theirs forever. Uh-huh. The prophet Amos was very clear on that, that God has made a covenant with the Jewish people, and he has never canceled his part of the covenant.
So this brings another topic that's, again, sure, in the news, you know, and you wanted to talk about this. I mean, for the last 60, 70 years, you know, the relationship between Jews and Christians has actually become closer.
Yes.
But now all of a sudden, and so that's a good thing, so I want you to talk about that. But now all of a sudden we have this whole movement of Christians who, and they're called supersessionists, who believe that, you know, one of the tenets is, came up over the last 50 or 60 years, I think, is that Christians were grafted into the Jewish tradition.
Yes, that's from the book of Romans.
Right, but the supersessionists say, well, now it's time for the Jews to give it up, and they're not the chosen people anymore. So there's this woman who used to work for Trump. What was her name? Brigine. She was I think she was a Miss America. And several of these other Christians that are out there saying, yeah, Jews have to give it up, and it's time for them just to become Christians. What, make some comments here about how you see things have evolved and about these folks that are making these comments now.
Well, one thing I would say, my observation is they are ignoring the pages of the Bible that they say they believe in. They believe the Bible to be the Word of God, and they're totally ignoring what it says. Again, the prophet Amos, he indicated and prophesied that the land belonged to Israel and God's covenant with them was forever. Okay, the idea that the Jewish people may have failed, what people don't fail? Everybody fails. And the whole concept of Christianity is that we're failed people that need a Redeemer and Savior. And so God didn't cancel his part of the bargain just because people have at times have thought that or moved in a way that they thought would cancel theirs. So they have misread the New Testament as well, where the Apostle Paul said, we're grafted in. We are not the vine. We're a branch. The Christians are a branch that's been grafted in to the promise of God. We believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Where did we get that? The Jews! So,
yeah.
That promise has never failed. So, and the Bible says God's not a man that he should lie, nor the Son of Man that he should repent.
So again, what did you take away? Because we got like another minute or so left here. What did you take away from your trip and bring back to the United States? And as you talk to people, what's the primary message that you got out of that trip?
I would say the primary message is that we need to support the Jewish people. It is a righteous thing to support Israel and Israel's right to be in the land. If anything, I am a Christian and I am a Zionist. That makes me a scary thing. I'm a Christian Zionist.
That's something. Well, you know, again, and what do you, how do you see this all playing out? I mean, because obviously we've got some, I guess, contention in the United States now. Again, yes. And I've never seen, again, I can't remember experiencing any anti-Semitism as a kid. You know, maybe a few times, but nothing like systemic. But it seems like there's a systemic growth of this happening in this country. Do you think it's going to get worse before it gets better?
I hope not. But humanity's nature is hard to predict. I'm hoping that people begin to realize, and the church will wake up to our dependence upon the Jewish people and the fact that we wouldn't have a Bible if it weren't for the Jewish people. The fact that we wouldn't know about the God that has that holy, unpronounceable name, yep, the Jews have, if it were not for the Jewish people.
All right. Well, on that, I hear the break music, so we'll take about a two-minute break, and then I want to turn to how your Christian values inform American politics and your politics. So folks, stand by. We'll be back in about 2 minutes.
I'm I'm not usually a reviewer, but I had an amazing experience at Davis Body Shop. From start to finish, the experience was ideal. Everyone was friendly, helpful, and professional. They kept me updated, did quality work, and had me in and out. No hassles, and returned my vehicle to me in perfect condition.
If you ever have an accident and need to repair your car, you could do what Ann did from Paso Robles. She took her car to Davis Body Shop. And Peggy from Atascadero said,
our family needed repairs to one of our cars, and friends had recommended Davis Body Shop. We were very pleased with their helpfulness, their attention to detail that was provided to us. They explained the process and kept us updated as repairs were made. They also assisted us in securing a rental car. I would definitely recommend them to anyone who needs repairs to a car.
Davis Body Shop is the area's largest auto body collision specialist on El Camino Real at Atascadero and on Theater Drive at Paso Chevrolet.
This is Billy Gallant with your locally owned and operated H&R Block office. As local accountants retire, many taxpayers are left wondering where to turn. H&R Block is ready when you need a trusted expert. With experienced tax professionals, your local H&R Block delivers reliable help year after year, no matter how the tax laws change. You'll get knowledgeable service, clear pricing, and flexible options to file. So if your old tax preparer is stepping away, step confidently into tax season with H&R Block. Trusted expertise that's here to stay. Call your local H&R Block office today to make an appointment.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location. Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Friday and has a dump station for your RV. Learn more. Call Delta Liquid Energy 805-239-0616 or go online DeltaLiquidEnergy.com.
Looking for a great indoor activity to get moving? Try Uncle Ed's Outfitters Indoor Archery for everyone 7 and over when accompanied by an adult. The new archery range is open 24 hours a day with unlimited access and coded entry for members. Uncle Ed's Outfitters would be happy to rent archery equipment or give you or the family a lesson from a USA Archery certified instructor. Book an hour or a day of indoor archery at Uncle Ed's Tuesday through Saturday from 10 to 6 in the Oak Shopping Center in Atascadero near Guesthouse Grill.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Pastor Frank Triggs. You can call or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. Well, you know, when I was growing up, Frank, they used to say the two things you're not supposed to talk about are politics and religion. In good company, I guess, or something like that. But it seems like we've got a connection now. You know, that the religious side on both sides of the aisle, both the left and the right, are speaking out about politics. So tell us a little bit about how your Christian faith and values impact your political views.
Well, first of all, I have to say what I had before my Christian faith was, as a kid, I loved going to the movies. I'd go to the cowboy movies. And you talk about John Wayne, you talk about Tom Mix, and names that a lot of young people have never heard of today. And there was always the hero, you know, the good guy and the bad guy.
Right.
And that's how some of my values were being formed, because I came from a broken home that, I can say my father was married four times, my mother three times, and so I know what raw life is all about.
Mm-hmm.
A stepfather who wasn't real thrilled about starting his marriage with a child already that wasn't his.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of trying to figure things out on my own until one day I came to an encounter with Jesus Christ that totally changed my life and healed a lot of the anger and the hurt and the bitterness that was within me. So then in reading the scriptures, the church I went to at that time said that Christians read the Bible. I didn't know that a lot of them don't. So I started reading the Bible, and my values began to form on what was found in the pages of scriptures. And I thought, this is amazing. This is how I'm supposed to behave. And it wasn't because I was threatened with hell if I didn't do those things. It was because there was somebody bigger than me that knew what was right and wrong. And I began to understand that, and it formed my values. I found out that the Bible is very pro-capitalist. I know there's people that have problem with that because they think that, well, the early Christians, they were socialists. They pooled their funds and they gave them away to one another. But the thing they miss, whether it's a Christian community that's living like a kibbutz, because that looks like a socialist, but it's not. Because you're free to walk in and you're free to walk out. It was totally 100% voluntary. People wanted to do it. They did it of their own free will. Socialism has never been by free will. And you can vote your way into it, but it's rare that you could vote your way out of it. And so I discovered that, oh, the Lord knows about profit and loss. He knows about one man that did it wrong. I had a sermon called Bigger Barns and Smaller Hearts. You know, he'd tear down the barn so he can store more of his stuff. And that God's provision for prosperity is so we'll be able to give, be able to be generous, be able to bless others, and not have a government looking down their nose at us and saying, we're going to take it and we're going to give it. We're the ones that should be generous.
Yeah. So what do you think about, I mean, the left has now coined this term Christian nationalism. If it's what they say, then, you know, I'm probably one, but I mean, you know, Christian nationalist. But I mean, what do you make of that whole criticism I think they're putting those two words together for a reason.
They are. And I wish they would define them specifically, because I'm a Christian and I'm a nationalist. I believe in our nation. I believe that we are to submit to the rulers, as the Bible says, unless they conflict with our faith. And then we have to prepare to take the consequences. In the early church, they were slaughtered and martyred by the thousands, by Rome, because there we could not burn incense and say Caesar is Lord, because we only had one Lord. So I wish they'd define that. If they are coming against the fact that the nation was founded on biblical principles, and here's that wonderful word, and I think it's a good one, on Judeo-Christian mm-hmm. principles, if they're fighting that, they're wrong, because we were founded on those principles. And today, as a matter of fact, if you read some of the early founding fathers, you discover that the one thing that they stood against as far as religion was Islam. It was an invader. Those are not the principles that our nation was founded on. We were founded on the Judeo-Christian principles. Now, if that makes me a Christian nationalist, I guess so, but I don't want to let them define what I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a Christian. I believe in America. And I pray every day, God save America.
Well, right. I mean, our first post-constitutional war was against the Barbary pirates.
Yes.
Who were, you know, kidnapping our sailors and selling them back to us for profit. So, real quickly, because we have like a minute left, and this will be something that we'll talk about on another time. But
sure.
Historically, when the United States, in Anglo-American history, when we're in a winter, you know, when the old institutions that we've gotten used to are we question everything today. Okay, but then there's that we call that a winter in the generational history aspect of things. We're eventually going to get into a spring, and one of the hallmarks of a spring is an awakening, a religious awakening. And there's been a lot of talk about this, that young people, especially young men, are going to church and because they want to have families and they want that connection. What are you seeing out there?
The scripture says in the book of Acts that there are seasons of refreshing that come from God. It's like there are some seasons where there is an open heaven and there is a revival going on. And the scriptures prophesy that in the last days, and by last days, there's no end of the world in the Bible. There's a beginning of a new world.
Yep. Well, we'll hold that thought and we'll talk about that the next time you come and visit. Thanks so much for coming in, Frank. All right, folks, when we come back, we'll be talking with Sarah Forsyth. She's a doctor of regenerative medicine, so stand by.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.